In our study tonight in the 12th chapter, of course, the book is coming to a close, and there's a purpose for this, purpose for the book. What is the theme of the book? God rules. That's right. God rules in the kingdoms of men. We saw in the second chapter of the book of Daniel that there were four kingdoms that were described. And as it describes the fourth kingdom, it says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, nor the sovereignty thereof be left to another people. But it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Now, in order for all that to come to pass, there was a history that was attached to that. Daniel gives us quite extensive history, and especially in the 11th chapter. Yes, Joey? Now, I've heard that many times.
I've heard that before.
Yes.
But that was his position. Well, you could comment on that.
Sure, I could. If you turn back to Daniel 2, and I'm going to try to not spend a lot of time on that, but get to Daniel 12, but I think I can answer it in short order. But in Daniel chapter 2, the conclusion to come to some fulfillment at the end of time, during the so-called thousand-year reign, you have to take the approach that he's not dealing with the Roman Empire in verse 45. But rather, as you get to verse 44. But as you get to verse 44 from the 40th verse, verses 40 and 41, you've got to establish some kind of a world empire that consists of a 10-kingdom confederacy. That's the argument that's generally set forth. And in order to get there, you have to conclude that he's not describing the fourth kingdom, but he is describing kingdoms yet to come. Now, if you look at verse 40, the text tells us, "And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that crusheth all these shall it break in pieces and crush. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom." Now, what is it that would be a divided kingdom? Hold that thought. Pardon me?
The fourth kingdom,
yes. And if you'll notice in the next portion of the verse, it says, "But there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken." When he describes this kingdom that is made up of feet and toes, thus some say 10-kingdom confederacy, what kingdom is he describing? Is he describing a separate set of kingdoms, or is he describing the nature of the fourth kingdom? And that's the key. I think that's the key that unlocks the verses. And then when he says, "Whereas thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron doth not mingle with clay." What is he saying about the nature of that fourth kingdom? Division. It will be a divided kingdom, and indeed Rome was. And as he continues in verse 44, "And in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven do this." In the days of what kings? In the days of the kings of this fourth empire, that would be a divided kingdom. And that's what he's describing. Now, anything outside that circle is nothing but conjecture. Terry? Yes, it is. And it's also a contradiction of Mark 1, 13 and 14, and other similar passages that talk about the nearness of the coming kingdom. For example, in Matthew, the 10th chapter, I believe it is, as well as Luke, the 10th chapter, 1 to the 70, 1 to the 12, they were to preach the nearness of the kingdom, that the kingdom is at hand. And when they were to preach the kingdom is at hand, they were preaching the same message that Jesus did in Mark 1 when he said, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Repent ye and believe the gospel." And so the timeline would not fit with some kind of millennial theory.
I'm sure that the position that some people take is that in the days of these kings, let's talk about here, Daniel, is a different event than the kingdom that Jesus was talking about, which was at hand.
Oh, certainly. The kingdom that they believe...
Right.
The kingdom that they believe Daniel was talking about is some kind of future kingdom at the second coming of Christ. But let me suggest this as a way to answer that, and I believe completely answer that. In Hebrews 12, verse 28, the Hebrews, the text tells us, who were becoming members of the body of Christ, it said that they were becoming or receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, one that cannot be shaken, some translations give it. The kingdom that Daniel said would be established, said that would be established in the days of these kings, is one that would break in pieces and consume all others and stand forever. If the kingdom that the Hebrews were receiving was not the kingdom that Daniel was talking about, then what will be of the kingdom that the Hebrews were receiving, that they were a part of, when the kingdom of Daniel 2 is established? You've got one that cannot be shaken, approached by one that's going to break in pieces and consume all others. How do you break in pieces and consume one that cannot be shaken? I suggest that they're one and the same kingdom. And that is the kingdom that is described in Hebrews 12 is the church, what those Hebrews were becoming a part of. Okay, Randy?
I was just going to say that the gospel, as taught by Jesus, was all about the kingdom.
Oh, yes.
It was all about all four Gospels. Jesus talked kingdom, 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 kingdom. All the parables, the kingdom of heaven is like. The kingdom of heaven is like. It was all about the kingdom. And then in Mark 9, he says, "Truly I say to you, there are some of you standing here today who will not taste death until they see the kingdom of God after his coming power." There can be no doubt.
No, some of that generation.
The kingdom that he preached came during that generation.
That's correct. And we weren't going to spend a lot of time on that. But maybe that answers your question sufficiently to take back to where you got the question. I think that Daniel 2, Hebrews 12, Mark 9, Mark 1, these are passages that you want to call to mind when you're discussing the kingdom as far as its time is concerned. And you might throw in the mix. Stephen had to say in Acts chapter 7 regarding this time element. I'll just leave that and let you read Acts chapter 7. He's giving a series of events that bring about a development of something at a very significant time. So we'll leave that there, and unless you have another specific question. Okay? Then we'll go on with our study. Back up, if you will, in the reading of the text. Randy, you've done a good job reading so far. Would you read for me the first four verses, please? Daniel 12, 1 through 4.
Daniel 12, 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm, please.
New American Standard Translation. "Now at the time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And there will be a time of distress, such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. And those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But as for you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until the end of time. Many will go back and forth, and knowledge will increase."
All right, in these verses, we've talked about a number of thoughts already in the first three, or the first two verses, including this description of something that would occur that had never been before or never would again. And that kind of time frames the things that Daniel is talking about. If you'll turn over in your New Testament to Matthew, the 24th chapter, Jesus is obviously talking about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And if I can find the verse, well, I just lost it. Oh, I'm sorry, verse 21. It says, "For then shall a great tribulation, such as hath not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, nor ever shall be." Just in that brief little blip, you see a similarity of what Daniel is writing about. Now the question is whether or not the similarity bears resemblance enough to conclude that what Jesus is describing is the same thing that Daniel was describing. And I think when you read the entirety of Matthew, the 24th chapter, the conclusion is inevitable. In Matthew, the 24th chapter, if you'll back up into the 23rd chapter and early into the 24th chapter, you see clearly that Jesus is talking about the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Verse 37 of the 23rd chapter says, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, that killeth the prophets and stoneth them that are sent unto her, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and ye would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth, till ye shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." And Jesus went out from the temple and was going on his way. And his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. But he answered and said unto them, "See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." It's clear that in the 24th chapter, Jesus is introducing things pertaining to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And then when he says at verse 21, "For then shall be great tribulation such as hath not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, nor ever shall be." The language that Daniel uses in Daniel chapter 12, and in particular the context of Daniel chapter 12, as he speaks concerning the abomination of desolation in verse 11. So likewise, Jesus speaks of the abomination of desolation in Matthew the 24th chapter at verse 15. And tells them at Matthew 24:15, "When therefore ye see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand." We're going to come back to that in a bit. But what we see just here is that there's a parallel between the things that Daniel is talking about and the things that Jesus is talking about in Matthew 24. And the conclusion, therefore, is that in Daniel chapter 12, he evidently is talking about those things that pertain to the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Now, in that context is where we want to fit the things that are discussed in Daniel chapter 12. If there are some conclusions that we draw that somehow escape outside that context, then evidently we've drawn the wrong conclusion. That's the things that set the stage for the discussion in Daniel chapter 12. And he says, "And many of them that sleep," verse 1, I want to comment briefly about this again. In verse 1, the latter part of that verse says, "And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book." Now, in our last discussion, those who are delivered, those whose names are written in the book, what book are we talking about and what deliverance are we talking about? All right, the Lamb's Book of Life, and those that sin, their names will be written in the Lamb's Book of Life if they are delivered. David?
You said, what were they delivered from? I said, sin.
From sin, that's right. All right, that's right. Now, verse 2, it says, "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some unto everlasting life, and some unto shame and everlasting contempt." And we were talking about that from the standpoint of it being a literal resurrection versus a spiritual resurrection or a resurrection of a cause. And we had some discussion about that. And I'm going to leave that there because I think our conclusion from verse 3 might be accurate in either case. But I lean heavily toward the spiritual resurrection, the resurrection of a cause. In verse 3 he says, "And they that are wise shall shine as brightness of the firmament, and they that turn away," or turn many, "to righteousness as the stars forever and ever." Now it would appear from this great affliction that's been described in verse 2, that there will be the rising of a new people. They that are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. They shall be the light of the world. You remember in Matthew the 5th chapter when Jesus is speaking in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew the 5th chapter at verse 13 beginning, he talks about our influence and how that we are an example in the world. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a lamp and put it on the bushel, or under the bushel, but on the stand, and it shineth unto all that are in the house. Even so, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Jesus is talking about those in this instance who would become his disciples. You're the light of the world. You put your light on the stand, and it shineth unto all that are in the house. The Apostle Paul used similar language as he wrote to the Philippians in Philippians chapter 2, reading beginning at verse 15. That ye may become blameless and harmless children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom ye are seen as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may have whereof to glory in the day of Christ, that I did not run in vain, neither labor in vain. Who is it that is seen as lights in the world? Who is it then that Daniel is talking about, who would be seen as lights in the firmament? Those who are faithful. Those who are faithful. These are the ones who would shine. Those who would turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. Yes?
Question. I've heard there are some people that have suggested that Daniel 12 verses 1 through 3 are quite possibly a prophecy with a double meaning. It would be a reference to destruction of Jerusalem as well as the final judgment.
Okay.
What would be your position regarding that suggestion?
If he's talking about the final coming, then I think we have...
Both, not just that, but both.
Yeah.
People believe that it could be a prophecy of a double meaning in the final judgment and the destruction of Jerusalem are, if you will, parallel events with similar events.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that they are similar in regard to destruction, but I think that Daniel is moreover talking about something specific that is defined by the expressions time of the end, which occurs a number of times in this context. In fact, in verse 4, he said, even unto the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. The time of the end is that which is being discussed when the question is asked, how long are these things going to last? And the time of the end, I think, is the point that's being established at verse 13, but go thou thy way till the time of the end. I don't believe he's talking about times, but I think he's talking about something in particular, not necessarily something that has a dual meaning. Now that's my take on it. Terry and then Richard. I've heard that.
Yeah, a lot of sermons that use that. And I think that probably is a source of thinking that these verses have a double meaning. But you pointed out
I think the context of Daniel 12 determines the answer to a lot of questions. So that's where I think I would camp. He's discussing those things that pertain to the time of the end. If we can identify what that end was, then that locks us in position. to put the context in a particular light where things outside that circle just won't fit. Though things that we might consider outside that circle might be true, it doesn't fit this context. You understand what I'm saying? There are things, points that we might establish that are true points, but we might use the wrong passage to establish them.
I can certainly say somebody can look at the structure of Jerusalem and the end of the world where the final judgment is and read these verses and say, hey, there's a parallel there.
Well, I think the...
And I can see people therefore concluding that Daniel 12 is maybe a reference that has, if you will, a dual meaning. I can certainly understand why people would conclude that.
I think the disciples... had somewhat of a misunderstanding when Jesus instructed them regarding the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, and they put this together with the end of time. That was clearly, I think, their conception. In Matthew 24, what is it, about verse 3 or 4 in that setting? Richard and then Randy.
I was going to say this is a technical point on Joey's question, is that at least to the best of my recollection, I cannot recall any dual prophecies that are in the same testament. In other words, if we have a prophecy in the Old Testament, there might be a duality of that prophecy in the New Testament, but we don't have any where there's a dual prophecy in just the Old Testament or just the New Testament.
It's an interesting thought. I'd have to think that through a little further. I don't know. I'd have to give that some more thought. Yes, Randy? Haven't thought of that.
This is just... This doesn't answer any questions, maybe it's just more food for thought, but when very seldom in my life have I gotten into a full study of Revelation, but when I have, it's always established right up front that the book of Revelation had to make sense to the people in the first century.
Oh, yes.
If it didn't make sense to them, then we can't draw any conclusions. It has to have made sense to the people that first read it, because those are letters, especially the first three chapters, letters to the seven churches. They had to get something out of it. And in the same way, the people that first read Daniel's prophecy must have had someone sharing that. We can't just say, well, it didn't mean anything until the kingdom came, and then you can look back and go, oh, now it all makes sense. It had to have meant something for the original readers of Daniel's prophecy, it seems to me.
I think it's true, keeping in mind, however, that Daniel wrote history before it happened. And those who might read what Daniel wrote initially might miss the point. And I think that there is evidence in this 12th chapter that those who would, after the fact, after the destruction of Jerusalem, who would read what Daniel wrote, would have a fuller understanding of what Daniel had to say.
Well, in the same respect as all the prophecies of Christ would have
right.
said make more sense
after right.
Christ.
Right. Right. So those who would read Daniel's prophecy after the fact, it would make more sense to them. Right. Richard?
Yeah, just reading, chapter, verse 2 here, you can see a lot of things that say, well, it says they're in the dust of the earth and all that sort of stuff. But Matthew Henry, interestingly, when he comments on this verse, points us back to Ezekiel 37 mm-hmm. about the Valley of the Bones. Mm-hmm. And though that's discussing about some particular prophecy, when he gets down to verse 11, he says, or verse 12, he says, therefore prophesy and say unto them, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, behold, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves, O my people, and I will bring you into the land of Israel, and ye shall know that I am Jehovah, when I have opened your graves and caused you to come up out of your graves, O my people.
Now note the context of that.
Right.
What's he discussing?
He's talking about their release from Babylon.
That's right. And he speaks of it as a resurrection.
Right.
As a literal resurrection, but it was not.
Right.
Okay, David? And then...
on Randy's comment, I've always looked at first 9, where it says, he should go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed to the time of the end. And I'm thinking the time of the end there is talking about when those things come to pass.
Yeah, I think
so
it is.
Daniel didn't understand. He said, okay, I didn't understand it.
Yeah, he sought to understand it.
They sealed it up, and then when it all happened, that's the kind of end. That's when everybody will know what they're talking about, because they see the quick history fulfilled.
Okay, that's right. We're going to get to that. Ken?
I'm going to step back some of your... What was Richard saying earlier about dual what now?
Oh, he was saying that he had never, to the best of his memory, seen a passage in the, correct me if I'm wrong, but seen a passage in the Old Testament that had a dual application even in the Old Testament. Is that what you said?
Right. In other words, there are no dual prophecies in the same testament. All dual prophecies are from the Old Testament to the New Testament.
Okay. All right, in the third verse, I've got another paragraph here I want to get to. It says, their wisdom will also include an urgency in turning others to righteousness in those troublous times, as well as turning many succeeding generations of believers to righteousness by their example. I think that's true when we look at those early disciples. We're encouraged by them as we even study them from the standpoint of church history, but in particular from the standpoint of what we read in first century times. What they did becomes an inspiration to you. In verse 4, it's been mentioned a number of times, this book was to be sealed up or shut up, verse 4. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. The book would be sealed up. And I think maybe we mentioned this in our last study, to preserve the accuracy of the prophecy and the integrity of its authorship. But the writer tells us, until what time? Even to the time of the end. That is, the end in this context. He's not talking about the second coming of Christ. Daniel did not mean that all of these prophecies in his book are going to be hidden all through the what we call Christian dispensation and revealed for fulfillment and understanding in some far distant future millennium. That's not what Daniel is pointing to. And the reason we know that is the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning. There's something in that that we can understand and make application of. It's not something that's pointing well beyond your existence. In Romans chapter 15, for example, Romans chapter 15, it says in verse 4, whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that through patience and through comfort of the Scriptures we might have hope. Can we understand what Daniel was talking about? And we've been studying at some length in the book of Daniel, but is it understandable? Is it something we can read and learn from? Well, it ought to be. The apostle said that it was written for our learning. Those things that were written aforetime are for our learning, and the things that happened to those of old. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 6, the writer says, now these things were our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things and so forth and so on, down through the next several verses. In verse 11, now these things happened unto them by way of example, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages are come. Can we learn from the things that we're studying in Daniel? Can we understand them? Make some application of them that's appropriate and right? Certainly we can. And in Luke 24, in verse 26 through 27, in verses 44 through verse 45, Jesus is talking about the fulfillment of all things that were written aforetime in the Psalms and the prophets and in the law concerning me. All these things must come to pass. Does that include the things that Daniel was talking about? The things that Daniel was talking about, even as it pertained to the coming of Christ, the establishment of His kingdom, and all of these things, they must come to pass. I think so. Yes, all of the things. If there was anything obscure relative to the prophecies, and in particular concerning His coming, His death, burial, and His resurrection, He explained those things. It says He opened their mind. That was not through some kind of mystical procedure, but He explained those things to them, much like you don't understand a mathematical problem and somebody explains that to you and the light bulb comes on. You see it, you understand it. Randy?
Wouldn't Luke 24, 44, wouldn't that be the approved text that Daniel can be talking about the second coming?
I think it's one of them, yes.
But he's in fact talking about the first coming.
Yes.
Daniel prophesied the first coming of Christ, not the second coming.
Well, Daniel 9, we've already talked about that. Yes, I think so. Yes, that's right. Okay.
Even 12. Daniel wrote 12.
Well, that's right. No doubt about that. Must be fulfilled. That's right. All of it.
Most of them. All except chapter 12.
Well, if there's any part of what was written concerning Him, now we need to identify that. If there was anything written about Him that had not been fulfilled, He is not the Christ.
I'm saying is if there was something that somebody wants to take out of context and say, oh, he's talking about the second coming. If it's about Christ, it's about the first coming.
Right.
According to Luke 24:44.
Yes. Yes.
And the fact of the matter is that these words weren't physically sealed up, because as Jesus speaks in Matthew 24, he's not speaking to people that don't already know what Daniel 12 says, as far as literally knowing the words. But what he's doing is he's unsealing the book by showing to them the meaning.
Well, that's right. And of course, we've got on the chart Matthew 24, verse 15, that I think is very relevant, that parenthetical statement, "Let him that readeth understandeth." You read it, you can understand it. You read it, you can know what Daniel was talking about. And the application, I think, is seen in the very next verse, verse 16, when he said, "Then let them that are in Judea flee unto the mountains." What was it that Daniel was talking about? He was talking about something the people could respond to, something they could see. And in particular, I know we're getting ahead, and that's typically what I do, but in the 11th verse, he talks about the abomination that maketh desolate, and Daniel is referring, or Jesus is referring, to the very thing that Daniel wrote about. And we're going to cover that a little bit further when we get down to that. But in Luke, the 21st chapter, he identifies what that was. When you see the city encompassed by the armies, it's time to flee. Randy?
Just a real quick one. Matthew 24:15, the parenthetical statement, "Let the reader understand," was that inserted by Matthew?
I don't believe so.
You think Jesus said the words, "Let the reader understand"?
Well, whether it was inserted or not, what relevance does it have? Yeah. It's inspired, period. I don't know.
whether Jesus spoke it or whether Matthew inserted it, it's
inspired either way. And the point is, when you read this, you best understand it, because it's time to flee the city. Yes.
And I think, I don't know whether you mentioned this a number of years ago in a sermon or somebody else mentioned it. The fact of the matter is that when we look at Daniel, Matthew 24, as you just alluded to, there's something that they can flee from.
Oh, yes.
So, therefore, it is not the end of time, because you can't flee the second coming. And so there's no reason to tell them to go hide in the caves and things like that.
That's right.
If we're talking about the second coming.
That's right. There's no place to go. There would be no reason to pray that it would not be in the wintertime, pray that it wouldn't be on the Sabbath day, and so forth.
So it's discussed. Fall.
Yeah. Yeah. There would not be any escape. All right, any other comment or question before we go forward with verse 4, just a little bit farther? Get back over here to it. In verse 4, it says, "Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." Whatever time that Daniel is referring to, many would run to and fro seeking knowledge. Again, the language is so similar. If you'll turn over to the book of Amos, and notice in the 8th chapter, and keeping in mind, what was the message of Amos? What was Amos telling about? Well, what were, for the most part, not all of them, but what were, for the most part, the minor prophets about? What were they warning?
Judgment
of the nations. That's right. And so when Amos is writing, he's talking about the day of the Lord. Judgment, if you please, not the end of time, but judgment was coming upon a nation of people. And if you'll notice in Amos, the 8th chapter, in verse 12, "And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from north even to the east. And they shall run to and fro to seek the word of Jehovah, and shall not find it. In that day shall the fair virgins and the young men faint for thirst, and they that swear by the sins," and so forth in verse 14. But they would search. What are they searching for? The word from God, and there would not be any word from God. God would be silent to communicate with them. Now in this text it says, "Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." Knowledge shall be increased. Would they learn anything in seeking knowledge according to Daniel chapter 12? It would appear so, yes. But furthermore, this characteristic of the end of time is not talking about the end at the second coming of Christ, but it would be something after Daniel is dead, something that would be in the future from him. Yes?
I was just thinking that knowledge was increased greatly
though that is true, I'm not sure that's the particular knowledge these would be seeking. I think that these would be seeking knowledge concerning the fulfillment of what Daniel has said. And Barnes has an interesting comment here. He says, by diffusing information and by careful inquiry, those of coming ages would obtain much clearer views on these points, or in other words, that time, and the intercourse of individuals and nations would clear up the obscurities of the prophecy. Whatever Daniel is prophesying that seems to be hidden or seems to be shut up or sealed, the passing of time would make that known. Does that make sense? They would begin to see the fulfillment of what Daniel had to say. Now, in verses 5 through 7, that's how the knowledge would grow. They would begin to see it coming to pass.
Even in the New Testament time, when John the Baptist came, there were people looking for the Messiah. They were anticipating that. Of course, they misunderstood the whole spiritual impact that they were looking for. First, there were people looking at that time, even before John the Baptist, so looking for that Messiah to come. They have obtained knowledge over the years and seen some of these things come through. They're looking for it to come pretty soon.
Well, that's what they were looking for. That's right, just before His coming. They were in expectation of that. I have a paraphrase here of verses 5 through 7. I want to read that, and then we're going to discuss it at some length. It says, "Then I, Daniel, looked and saw two other angels besides the one in linen." Now, the one in linen is the one that we discussed from the 10th chapter, verse 5. That was above the river, the Tigris River, as the footnote that is given, the Hedekel, I think it is, in the American Standard Translation. It says, "And one of them, one on each bank of the Tigris River, and one of them asked the one who was clothed in linen and now hovered above the waters of the river, 'How long will it be until these extraordinary terrors end?' This great angel then lifted both his hands toward heaven, swearing by Him who lives forever and ever, and declared that they would end in 3.5 years, or time, times, and half a time." In other words, when the scattering of the part of the holy people, or scattering of a part of the holy people, shall have ceased, then all these extraordinary terrors will have come to their end. Now, in verses 5 through 7, the question, I think, becomes significant. How long shall it be to the end of these wonders? Now, notice he's not saying, how long will it be to the end of the world? That's not his question. The things that Daniel has been revealing, how long will it be till these things end, till they come to a conclusion, a culmination? Now, that's the question, and that sets the context for the things that we're discussing in this 12th chapter. It says, "And I heard the man," verse 7, "clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river." You might want to just simply look back to chapter 10, verses 4 and 5 to get the picture that's being presented and see the continuity of thought from the 10th chapter on through the 12th chapter. He says, "And when he held up his right hand and his left hand into heaven, and swear by Him that liveth forever and ever, that it shall be for a time, times, and a half. And when they made an end of breaking in pieces the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished." This idea of time, times, and a half. We've talked about that before, haven't we, in the book of Daniel. And we've identified that times, or time, times, and a half a time. How long of a period of time are we discussing? And of course, in this paraphrase, he makes that clear. 3.5 years. Now, jumping ahead with what knowledge we have of where Daniel 12 is pointing, and essentially what the book of Daniel has been pointing to in terms of God ruling in the kingdoms of men and the destructions of nations, we know that the nation of Israel is to be destroyed. And we know that in 70 AD, it was destroyed by Titus the Roman general. Now the question is, how long did it take for the city of Jerusalem to fall?
A while.
Okay, can we be a little bit more specific?
3.5 years.
About 3.5 years as far as the ultimate fall of the city. Time, times, and half a time. 3.5 years, I think, is what Daniel is pointing to. Now, this angel above the river, we're going to come back and revisit that. Although the majestic messenger of chapter 10, verses 5 and 6, you may not think this is relevant, but it struck me as important, is not spoken of as being above the waters of the river in chapter 10. Yet Daniel's description of the one in each passage being clothed in linen seems to identify the one in each passage as the same. Now, what I'm trying to say in that is that the one clothed in fine linen, the one above the waters of Daniel 12, is the same as the one clothed in fine linen in the 10th chapter that was above Hiddekel or the Tigris River. In other words, the continuity of thought from chapter 10 on through chapter 12. This is one vision, if you please, that Daniel saw. And the two men, angels, one on either side of the river, are not mentioned in chapter 10. But nonetheless, I think perhaps they are alluded to when Daniel says that he had been touched by the hand of one of these and it had given him strength. The only persons, if you please, that I am familiar with that would be in this setting would be the one above the waters and the one on each side of the waters, each side of the river. Now, maybe that has no relevance in your thinking, but I think it paints the picture for us, and it's suggested because of these special messengers, the special messenger, rather, above the water, and the hand that touched Daniel appeared to have been on the ground beside him. It helps us to see some continuity in the picture itself. Okay? Now, more specifically, in verses 5 and 6, the question, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? How long would it be to this terrible period that's described in Daniel 12, verse 1? How long would that last? Now, you see why Daniel asked that. That's a legitimate question. What's Daniel being shown that gives him great grief? The destruction of his people. That's right. It's hard for him to fathom the destruction of his people. How long is this going to be, he says. Now, the angel answers him when he says time, times, and half a time. We've seen that in chapter 7, verse 25, and it's an expression that occurs either identically or in similar language at least three or four times in the book of Revelation. And it seems to indicate a period of trouble. Randy?
Did you say Daniel asked the question? It says verse 6, one said to the man dressed in linen who was above the waters of the river, how long will it be till he hears these wonders? It sounds like one of those men asked the other man.
Well, now that's perhaps so. I had taken that Daniel had said that, Randy. Then I, Daniel, looked, verse 5, and behold, there stood other two, implying that there was someone else, or at least that there are others on the scene. That's, I think you're right. And I heard the man, Daniel heard the man clothed in linen who was above. I think you're right. Above the water when he held up his right hand. And yeah, I think you're right, Randy.
It seems to me that the reason that Daniel didn't ask is because he didn't understand. Verse 8 tells us he doesn't even understand what he's saying.
But he asked the same question in verse 8. Daniel does ask the question, but he doesn't ask it in verse 6. He's the one that asked it in verse 8. What shall be the issue of these things? What shall be the latter end of these things? So Daniel does ask the question, but he doesn't ask it in verse 6. I believe you're right. He waits till verse 8 when he understood not these things, and he's determined to understand them.
Verse 6, how long will it be until the end of these wonders? Verse 8, my Lord, what will be the outcome of these events? At least that's the American standard.
Well, the American standard says the issue of these things and has a footnote, the latter end of these things. I think he's asking the same question because that's, again, the context. The things that are being told him, what's going to be the end of that? How's it going to turn out? And I think that's implied in verse 6 when the angel asks the question, and certainly when Daniel does in verse 8.
Mickey?
Yes.
In the New King James Version, in verse 6, the word one is in italics. And one said to the man, the word one is in italics.
Yeah.
Which means I think it's supplied by the translator. So that, the word is not really there in the original text. So if you remove the word one because it's not in the original text, it would just say, and said to the man clothed in linen. So I guess my question is, maybe we don't know for sure who's doing the asking.
Well, that could be so, but we do know that Daniel has asked the question in verse 8. We know that's so. So the identity of the person of verse 6, though it may be obscure, is cleared in verse 8. We know that Daniel asked it. How long shall that be? And again, this 3.5 years seems to be a period of trouble that was for a nation and its people. That's the thing that Daniel is concerned about. The entire prophecy must have been fulfilled by the termination point of the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, when the Romans smashed through the walls of Jerusalem. In that year, the power of national Israel was shattered. Interestingly enough, the destruction of Jerusalem took about 3.5 years. Now,
that's a surprisingly long time to me. So, as far as the onset of when the destruction started, until it was complete, 3.5 years seems like an awfully long time to completely out of the destroyed city.
Well,
such a thing could happen in a matter of a month or two, you would think.
Well, but not hardly. When you think about how the city of Jerusalem was structured, it was upon a hill and it had several fortified walls around it. There was an inner and outer city. And so it was structured for its defense. And it did take the Romans quite a long time to besiege the city and then ultimately to destroy it. And one of the means that they thought would be best is just wait them out and starve them to death. Terry? That's true. Yeah, that part's true. They did. They had to stage themselves before they could conquer the city of Jerusalem.
They were actually there about 4 or 5 years earlier. When they had the army came and then something happened.
They withdrew.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the guy's name? I'm reading about that. But they had come and earlier, and that's when a lot of the Christians left. And they were there like 4 years. I think it was like 4 years earlier.
Yeah, I've got it over down the pike several slides. All right, Randy and then Joey.
I notice on your slide in that year the power of national Israel was shattered.
Israel as a nation.
But Israel as a nation was shattered by the Babylonian Empire.
Oh, they've been shattered a number of times.
What I'm saying is there really was no nation of Israel anyway. They were.
They have their genealogy.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but they were allowed to have their own government. So they perceived themselves as a nation of people. They understood they were under Roman thumb, and they thought that's what Jesus came to release them from. But they were allowed to have their own government as long as they didn't make trouble for Rome.
I guess I have a hard time thinking of them as a nation after they were carried off into captivity. Then Babylon let a few of them come, or yeah. Persia.
Well, it wasn't a nation like it had been, but I think Matthew 21 helps us to understand in Jesus' statement that the kingdom shall be taken from you and given to a nation, bringing forth the fruits thereof. Jesus parallels the two. Here's yours, and here's mine. So that I think, helps us with that. They perceived themselves as a nation, and they understood what he said. David, and then Terry, did you have your hand up? Did I see your hand?
B.C. 163, I think it goes up to about 63 B.C. So they had about 100-year rule there, and they weren't bothered by the Greeks or Romans or anybody.
That was during the time when they had become victors through the Maccabean Revolt. Yeah, that's right.
Now, they never wore that, that glory that they had under Solomon and David.
That's right.
They never did get that, but they were a thriving nation.
They have a king during that time?
A king during that interim?
The Hasmonean dynasty.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, they never wore that. Of course, even in Solomon's time, it wasn't like the world powers as far as like going all the way over to Spain or anything like that.
Oh, no.
Kingdom with all the surrounding nations paid taxes to them. So it wasn't like a force going out and conquering like the Babylonians, Assyrians, and stuff like that.
Right. I'm going to give you a homework assignment. We're treading a little bit slowly. I want all of you to give some serious consideration and thought to verses 11 and 12, not only as it pertains to the discussion of the abomination that maketh desolation, but some of those numbers in verses 11 and 12. Work on those.